Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest, and of course our guest this afternoon hopefully is going to be David Considine. And David has worked as an exorcist. Apparently he has worked in the past with Father Malachi Martin, who I'd had the privilege of meeting and working with. And then David actually has certainly worked within the structure of the Catholic Church, because at least certain portions of the Catholic Church understand this spiritual battle that's going on. Others, I fear, are on the other side, frankly dedicated to the dark side. So you have within the Catholic Church, but also within the Protestant Church and within the Jewish religion, this spiritual battle that's being played out. And of course, remember, the battle is being played out, in the economic field, it's being played out in the educational field, it's being played out in the entertainment field, and yet few people are really talking about the extent of this spiritual battle, which really is the common denominator behind everything that is happening. And this is the reason why we were over in the Middle East. We're not there for the oil primarily, although the oil is a benefit. We're not there primarily for Israel, as they would have you believe. We're not there primarily simply to make a lot of money for Halliburton and Carlyle. There are powerful spiritual forces that have drawn us into the Middle East, and I fear are going to be drawing us into an expanded conflict in the Middle East, despite the fact that neither the American people want it, nor the Iranian people, nor the people of the Muslim world. Well, with that as a background, Mr. Considine, are you there?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you with us. And
oh, it's a joy.
Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? I understand that you knew Malachi Martin.
Yes, I worked with him a few times.
All right, fine. Well, of course, did you work with him when he was involved with exorcism? He really wasn't an exorcist, was he?
No, he was really you could call him a theologian. He held the traditional ways.
All right.
When the new Vatican Council, the Second Vatican Council, came about, he was one of those who felt that they went a little too far. He pulled away.
All right, fine. And of course, he wrote a wonderful book.
Point Swept House, and many others.
Well, I was thinking of the Hostage of the Devil. That was the first one first time I'd ever heard of Malachi Martin. And sometime we'll tell the story about what happened to my wife when she sat down in the bed in the hotel room over there in Hawaii and started to read that book, because it almost frightened her to death. But
and for
probably very good reason.
In Hawaii?
Right.
Yes, we just received a case out of Hawaii.
You did, right?
Yes. Once in a while, someone will take one of the stones from the volcano. Strange things start happening.
Really?
It was once in a while we get some eclectic phone calls.
Well, why don't you tell us how you got started in this?
Well, I actually had an experience when I was very young. I was around 12 years old. I was behind my parents' house. There was some history about that area that I did not know about at that time. I found out later. I was fishing in one particular night. It was actually coming to nightfall.
Okay, if you wouldn't mind just holding the mouthpiece on the telephone just a little further away, come to be more clear. Go ahead.
Coming through a little strong. I was around 12 years old. I was fishing one particular night, and I was just finishing up, and I wanted to go back home. Off to my left-hand side, I saw something black come across the ground. And as it came up to me, it came in maybe about 5 or 6 feet away from me. It rose up like a pillar and scared me. I didn't know what this was, and I ran from there.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with David Considine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And I'd read about David on the internet, asked him to come on and be our guest. David actually has worked in the past with Father Malachi Martin, who had written the book, one of the first books to introduce me to the other dimension, a book we first read, I think, about 1980, called The Hostage is the Devil. And it was the story of five exorcisms, which had been certified and documented by the Catholic Church. And it was my first inkling that there was another spiritual dimension. Of course, as a Christian, I knew that there was something else out there, but I didn't understand how real and tangible it was. And of course, that's led me on a fascinating odyssey over the next 27 years to where we are today. But of course, David Considine had known Father Martin, and he himself had had an experience when he was very young. Why don't you start to tell that story again and repeat it, because now we have some new listeners.
Sure. I was around the age of, it was around the age of 12. It was some land, you could say, behind my parents, where my parents lived. And there was a river down there, and I was fishing one particular night. Now, down in that area, I did not know what the history was. I found out later. But the history was that there was a lot of parties, there was a lot of debauchery that went on. They would do things that I don't think we would approve of. And a man had committed suicide also in the same area. Well, without that knowledge, I was down there fishing. And something had approached me from my left side. And this was an image. The only way I can describe it to you is it was black, almost like a cloth coming across the ground. And it rose up into a pillow-type shape about 5 or 6 feet away from me. At this point in time, I was very, very scared. And I ran out of there like any child would. And I felt invaded. I felt as, you know, I'd gone down there to enjoy myself, and at that age, I didn't know what it was, of course, and I just felt as though this was really a monster, and it wanted to hurt me. I felt that it wanted to hurt me or do something to me. But it intrigued me at the same time. And from that day forward, I studied every book that I could find. I was probably looked down upon by the librarians at the local school there, picking out books about ghosts and witches and demonology and whatever else I can lay my hands on. Later on in years, I had heard about Ed and Lorraine Warren. I had attended one of their lectures. I talked my parents into going. My father was a little apprehensive about going. And after going through the lecture, which is a wonderful lecture always from them, I learned a lot. And I went up to Ed and I said, I want to do what you do. And he kind of laughed at me and said, come back and see me sometime. And when I was around 17 years old, I did. And I started working with them from time to time and then increased over the years. And I met various individuals like Bishop Robert McKenna, Malachi Martin, all these individuals.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead.
Okay. Am I back? now, in meeting these individuals, you become involved with their work also. So I learned the field work is really where you learn in this subject, in religious demonology and exorcism. You can learn from books, but just being there and experiencing it for yourself and experiencing it with individuals that are already learned, it's very important. It's a very dangerous subject. You have a lot of individuals out there that go in it haphazardly. And this is not to say that anyone is going into it and putting themselves in jeopardy on purpose. It's just that they may not know what could be there. There are certain places that have a history to them. It may draw these demonic type entities, and they can latch on to you. You could be at a state in your life where you're weakened, and they can move in. They can follow you home. You can move into a home that may have a history, and maybe the family is in some type of disruption. Some quarrel is going on. There's this emotional upheaval. It starts to work its way in. You know? So in any case, you just have to be careful. But I learned from these individuals, and I learned how to protect myself. And also, I must add that my parents and my grandmother, God rest her soul, she prayed for me. I learned, you know, from my parents also, you know, how to interact with this. Oh, I don't know what that is. There's sound coming through. I'm sorry about that. I learned from them also how to protect myself. And in that, I started to work with this over the years, becoming involved with cases. And then after a while, I started to be more so inclined in starting my own group. So I started Phantasm in 1994. And this was designed to help individuals, looking at this on a research level, but also bringing in the proper authorities where we need help for these individuals, be it that it's an individual or a family.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, how prevalent is this demonic possession how prevalent are these hauntings, as you describe them?
I would say, on average, with the cases that we have coming in, on average we're receiving probably between 5 and 6 cases that are for real, be it that it's demonic infestation or a possible case of possession, oppression, or obsession, you know, at any one of the three stages. And the three stages are basically the intercession of the demonic in the person's life. It's the stage where it starts off where the person, well, for example, they'll start off with a Ouija board, and they think they're contacting something that it's appearing as a young boy. Maybe the girl is, well, to say a female is contacting something through a Ouija board or something. That'll start off, and it'll entice them to further this. And this is the obsession. And the stage of oppression is where it's starting to impede on the person's life. It's changed at this point in time. And the full possession is when the person is under total control of this entity. And the prevalency, I mean, really it's hard to say, but I would say 80% of our cases that come in are real, I would say.
Now, of course, do you do this full-time, or do you have another occupation?
Full-time.
Are you able to make a living doing this?
I lecture.
You lecture, okay. And so basically then you are available for lectures, and people have you come in and you explain to this. A lot of people are skeptical about this because, you know, sometimes when I tell people that there is another dimension out there, that there really are these beings from the other dimension, they sort of look at you with this sort of blank stare as if to say, what planet did you come from? Next thing you have to tell me is that UFOs are real. And I have to say, well, yep, now they are, but they're part and parcel of the same situation.
Oh, they sure are. That's the satanic delusion. What better way to come into our world and present themselves and to be accepted? Now, if you accept them, if we'll say, for example, there are those that believe that these quote-unquote aliens seeded the Earth, and that's how we came to be. Now, if you put all of your stock in that, you've pulled yourself completely away from God. You've separated yourself. Be it whatever religious background you come from, you cannot gain that protection because you've pulled yourself away. And it doesn't matter what religious background you are. Once you've lost that faith, there's no protection.
And I think the difficulty is that so many of our young people today are victims of their education that has destroyed their faith in God. They've been taught evolution is real, that we all evolve from a lower form of life, from a little slime in a pond, and somehow that became the human beings. It takes a lot of faith to believe that. But that if you don't believe in the Bible, how can you possibly believe that there is another spiritual dimension to life? And if you don't understand that, you can't understand anything going on today.
Well, the human usually falls into circular reasoning. You know, even as you describe with evolution, we ask the question, well, how do you date the fossils? We date it by the geological column. Well, how do you date the different levels of the geological column? By the fossils. So it's circular reasoning. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, sometimes I think we live in a world gone mad, otherwise I'm absolutely certain we do. But be that as it may, we have to deal with the reality that so many people will watch a television program like The Medium, and they will accept that this is real, that there's this very nice, attractive blonde lady who has these dreams and can get this information for her dreams and help the DA get the bad guys. But when we begin to explain that this, of course, occurs at every level of life, well, they really can't carry it over from television to the reality, and yet the television program is based on a true life story of a woman named Alison DeBois.
Yes. And these individuals, from time to time, there are these individuals that are, for whatever reason, they're given this knowledge. There was a gentleman, David Booth, and for 10 days, prior to a crash that happened back in the 70s, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, he had dreams for 10 days prior to this crash. And he had contacted the airport and described to them what he saw. And unfortunately, when that dream ended on that 10th day, the crash did happen, unfortunately. But no one knew which plane it was going to be. But I do believe that at certain times people do receive this knowledge, but you have to be very careful where it's coming from. You know, even in using a Ouija board or any type of divination, you know, as we're probably going to go into in this program, you have to be very careful where that information is coming from. It's like flipping through a phone book, and you just shove your hand in those pages, and you're dialing the first number you come to. You don't know who you're talking to. You don't know who you're receiving this information from. I've had cases where family members appeared to someone in a home. It was not the family member. Not to say that that happens all the time. It may be a family member. But in most cases, I would have to say, being fair in it, usually in that case, when the person sees a family member, they desire to see them again. Sometimes it may happen once. Very rarely is it ever going to happen twice. If it does come back, be very wary. Be very cautious.
Well, don't you really think that most of these are demonic manifestations? After all, we're told in the scriptures, it's given but once to die, and then the judgment. So most of these manifestations, post-death manifestations, really demonic spirits?
Yes.
Posing, you know, as a family member?
Yes. I had been involved with the case. I don't want this to be too long for you, but the case involved a young girl that had passed away from cancer. Her father had, on the night she died, he bought a balloon. Now, the balloon obviously never made it to the young girl. He never made it to the hospital room on time. So the young girl's balloon that she was to receive was put into her room. During the interview with this family, because different things were happening in this house, just to make a long story short, during the interview, I was sitting at the table. This balloon residing in the upper part of the house. It was one of those chromium balloons that says happy birthday. Different things on it. I don't remember exactly what it said on it. But this balloon on video floats from that room, down the hallway, down the stairs, through the living room, into the area where we were, and had come to rest between the mother and father.
Well, of course, this is not something that the average person really wants to get involved with. If you don't have, you know, certainly God's protection, you're dealing with these things, you too can become possessed. If you don't have a circle of people praying for you, I mean, you are in the front lines of a terrible, battle, or a battle against evil forces that even many, many Catholic priests have succumbed to. Mm-hmm. And certainly, I know Protestant ministers who have gotten into this, and they themselves have become demonically possessed.
I've met individuals from multi-denominations that were very, very pious and very good at what they've done. But I've noticed that they don't remain for very long. I've been doing this for about 20 years, but it's not that direct contact. If the case is at that level, I bring it directly to the proper authorities. I know where my boundaries are. I work under the authority of Bishop Robert McKenna, but I know where my boundaries are. That's a security in my life and in my line of work. I know how far to go.
All right, fine. Now, you're going to have to tell me who the bishop is. Where is his diocese?
He is in Stepney, Connecticut.
All right,
actually,
fine.
It's in Monroe, but it's actually Stepney, Connecticut. And he's at Our Lady of the Rosary Chapel. If the show's earlier, actually like yours is, you may be able to get him on. I could probably help you to arrange that.
All right, fine. So basically, because you're working under the authority of the Catholic Church, and how do you know when you better back off? What's your first clue that this is really going to be beyond your ability?
Well, it really would be in the testing of the individual. And what I mean by this is that there are certain things that I would rather not go into because I don't want someone to do this.
All right, fine. Well, then it's all right. You don't have to give us anything that would be too sensitive.
When they start exhibiting enormous amounts of strength, if they start speaking in languages that they could not possibly know, once I have those signs, once I realize for a fact that this person is definitely under the control of something, be it whatever it may be, that's when I pass it on.
And I think really one of the most amazing things I know when I first began studying this realization that these people would suddenly be able to speak Chinese, or, you know, these are illiterate people, something, or they'd speak Russian or in an entirely foreign language that they had never heard of. And when you hear that, you realize this is a frank possession, isn't it?
They're speaking ancient Aramaic.
Ancient Aramaic.
Not too many individuals know how to speak that.
All right, fine. And so, basically, these demons are pretty smart. This is not imaginary, it's real.
That's correct.
And would even, of course, be, would not be significant, and thus, except it permeates every aspect of our society, even some of the key people at every level of our government today. Well, our guest is David Considine. David, go ahead and pick up this story there. And of course, so you actually, if you get into a problem, why, you go to the bishop. But now, then do they have regular exorcists that are trained in this?
Well, the traditional Catholic Church is kind of scattered at this time. Different priests take care of different areas. I work with one exorcist who actually, he will say Mass in Canada, and then he will come down to North Carolina area, and then at some point, as a matter of fact, he had gone down for a consecration in Mexico. They are scattered throughout, and if you look on the traditional Catholic schedules for Mass, you'll usually find every third week, every fourth week, because it's just, we don't have that amount of priests that you would see in the modern Catholic Church.
Basically, you're dealing with the Catholic Church that holds the traditional beliefs, yes, rather than those that came out of the Second Vatican Council.
Yes, not going so far as to go Orthodox and treading on Gnosticism, as it were.
All right.
I'm not saying anything against them. I'm just saying that we try to just keep the traditional standard.
All right. Of course, the great tragedy of today is this terrible schism within the Catholic Church. It's really having a... to me, this is, even though I'm not Catholic, it's really drawing people away from Christianity and to believe in our Savior, which, mm-hmm, of course, what binds all Christians together. Is this something of deep concern to you and other people in your movement?
I believe so. I try not to get into the politics, but I would have to say that I've seen many who have pulled away and have held in their heart the actions of men, instead of seeing Mother Church as Mother Church, meaning that they are judging the church by man and not by what it actually stands for. When you pull away, it falls. It's like a pyramid. You pull the bottom away, it falls.
Right. Well, anyway, this is a great tragedy. And Christianity is under attack today as an evangelical Christian. I see this attack on the Protestant church as you see the attack on the Catholic Church, as my Jewish friends see the attack on the Jewish faith. I mean, certainly there is a conspiracy against God, and there's no question in my mind. Well, tell me about some of the things that really have happened. Or can you talk about some of your cases?
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, some of the TV shows show some examples of our cases. The Presence was just released on Discovery Channel. Were you able to see that?
No, I really wasn't. Tell me about it.
Well, the case, the Presence was based on a case that we had worked on in California, and this was back in 2002. It involved a young mother and her daughter and her son. In this home, when they had moved in, they had no idea what the history of this property was. The history of the property, after we had become involved, after we had found out what went on, was so tragic. There was an Indian massacre on this property. This was in California, in the Napa Valley. Also, there was a murder on the property. We had found, looking through the local newspapers dating back around about 100 years ago, we had seen 12 suicides. One of them was very mysterious. A woman was found down by the river near her home, actually just right across the street. She was found with a bullet hole in her head and a child that was born post-mortem that was floating in the water. I don't mean to be too graphic here, but just to give you an idea of what this property had. Now, before her moving in, now she did not know this, but there was a woman and her daughter. The daughter was practicing Satanism.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, go right ahead and pick up the story there.
The daughter of the woman who owned the house prior. Now, the woman that we were working with did not have this knowledge, but the woman prior who owned the home, her daughter was practicing Satanism. When the woman that we were in contact with talked to her neighbor, she found out the history. She found out about the person that owned the house prior and her problem with the daughter, because she would go to the local neighbors and say that there was things moving around her house while her daughter was doing this in her room. They ended up moving out at one point in time, and the house was unoccupied for 2 years. The woman we worked with bought the house. Now, like I mentioned before, she had a daughter and a son. She had met a very, very nice young gentleman. He had moved into the home. And after residing in the home for a few months, the daughter, sleeping in her room one particular night, had this vision of a young girl dressed in a 1950s-type outfit this woman would stand next to her, this girl would stand next to her bed at the doorway. Her bed was very close to the door. Her eyes would bulge, and she would say certain things to her to scare her. Her eyes would start bulging, as I said, and she would get over the top of her, and she would breathe this putrid air into her face. This is just causing fear. This is to get the person so they feel uncomfortable. Of course, anyone's going to feel uncomfortable at this point in time, but this was the beginning. Now, the daughter was very frightened about this. She traded rooms with her brother, kind of humorous, actually. The brother started to have things happen to him. Now, he was 8 years old. What he perceived was not what the sister perceived. He perceived two individuals, two small dwarf-like individuals that would walk out of his closet. They had pails of paint. They were trying to entice him because he liked to finger paint. They know how you tick. When you deal with the demonic, they know us better than we know ourselves. In this instance, they were presenting themselves to the child as something pleasurable. But after a period of time, they frightened him. It would keep him up at night. When I met this young boy, when we first initially got there, he had bags under his eyes like a little old man. He was not sleeping at night. But I must add also that it progressed through the family. The mother had experienced blood coming from the walls. Almost horror movie type stuff. But these effects are produced to create a sense of unrest, uneasiness, fear. Now she's locked into this house. She spent all of her money on this house. It knows you can't leave. So now it starts to increase this attack. After a while, she's getting attacked where she's being held down by her throat and in the bed, restrained. She's feeling these hands on her. These different family members are going through this, but they're not experiencing the same thing. It got to a point where they just could not take it anymore.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, if something like that would happen, it would just frighten anybody to death.
I have a woman right now in Massachusetts. Her cheekbone is crushed in. Matter of fact, we were to do an interview with her the other night, and we could not because she was thrown down a flight of stairs.
So sometimes, of course, these demons can become really, very, really, very, very violent.
Oh, yes, but let me say this about this to finish up that case. The mother had contacted us. To this day, we don't know how she had gotten a hold of us because at that point in time, we weren't as well known as we are now. We're doing the TV shows and whatnot, and that's why we do them, because if we didn't, no one would know that we were there. So we do them. We try to do them the proper way. And Discovery Channel, New Dominion Pictures, they really do a great job. The producer at New Dominion Pictures is a great man. He's very spiritualistic. He's very, very devout to his work, so we appreciate that. He's a great man. But back to the case again, once again. The mother had contacted us. She had prayed to Padre Pio. She had made this initial contact through the email. We had set up an interview with her, and she explained what was occurring. Now, this is when we had started doing the research and found out what happened on the property. Of course, we did not tell her about that because it would just frighten her more. But we kept this in the back of our mind, and we knew what we were dealing with. We were dealing with a demonic infestation. We knew we needed to get there. Now, in that time, we had to arrange equipment to be sent out. We had arranged with her, the woman in California, to have this equipment shipped to her. So there was this process, all these things coming together. We finally had gotten there. We spent the night there. We spent actually a week, but the first night we spent there was quite extraordinary. I was in the bathroom area, and I had a towel rack that actually had it was screwed into the wall. It actually came out of the wall and hit me in the head. Also, at one point in time, I was laying on the floor while observing the monitors, and a large fist, like, I can't describe it really to you like a hammer or a fist, but it was a large boom next to my head. At that point in time, within that split second, I was raised up, without bending my knees, was raised up from the floor, levitated, to my feet. I don't know if this was angelic to gain my attention so I was able to defend myself in some way, or was it the power of the demon in the home? I don't know to this day. But it was quite frightening just on that first night. And we had spent a week in this home. Within 5 to 6 days, we were thoroughly convinced that there was something going on in the home, obviously. So I had the permission from Bishop McKenna, and I had brought the proper articles with me, the holy incense and the rite of the minor form of exorcism, and I had the permission from Bishop McKenna. This was initiated. We had gone through the whole house. The wife, the mother, I should say, had saw the black entity pass through the wall as we were walking through the home.
Hold on, we'll be right back here.
Sure.
David, go right ahead with the story there.
The mother had seen this black form pass through the wall, and it was heading towards the outside of the house. It was the corner of the house, the back part of the house. Now, we had moved from the inside of the house out to an old work shed. We had entered into the work shed, and there was a light on inside of the work shed. When we entered in, all the lights went out. It was a popping sound, and all the lights went out. I threw holy water into the shack, and I was continuing with... I'm sorry about that noise. It keeps coming through the phone.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. I had thrown the holy water in, and the lights had come back on. I could... fumigation. Now, after this period of time, everything had settled back down, but not after the walls. And when I say the walls shook inside of the shack, it was, I thought there was an earthquake just under that little shack. It was that bad. I mean, the reverberations knocked everything off the shelves. The lights still stayed on, remained on, but everything in that room just shook with just this. It was just a as though there was an earthquake. It's the only way I can describe it to you. But then it ended. It just stopped immediately as it started. And that was the end. They tell it a little bit better.
And they decide just to leave you alone?
Yes. Well, they were cast away from there through the authority of Bishop Robert McCann.
Otherwise,
an extension of him.
All right. Then that you were able actually to invoke the name of the Lord and to actually...
Oh, yes, through the minor form of exorcism.
All right, fine. And, of course, it means, really, we can't do anything on our own. There's no way that I or you or anybody else can be effective, but calling upon the name of the Lord, which is an amazing, truly miraculous thing, how many times these demons believe. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. And there is a process in this also. I also fast. I had fasted for 9 days prior to this. I should add that. So you're at a state where you're physically incapacitated, but on a spiritual level, you're very, very close to God. You're giving up. And when you fast, it's that you're giving up for that family, for that particular reason. There's in everything that you do in this, it has to be for that family, for this cause. So you're not giving anything up for yourself. You're giving it up for the family. So when I do not partake of certain things, like food, I eat certain light foods, salads, things of this nature. So it's a light fasting, but it goes on for about 9 days. But you're giving it up, and you're saying your rosary, you're attending mass, confession, you're purging yourself. You're becoming ready. You're putting on that spiritual armor. And I also suggest to people they can do the same thing. And the way that they can do this is use the St. Michael prayer.
All right. Hold right there. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, David Constantine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and David was simply describing this amazing experience it had. Is that the one that they actually covered in the Discovery Channel?
That is correct.
And, of course, eventually, of course, the conflict with the demon, the levitation, it's an amazing story. If you'd like to get the complete tape, it is available. And eventually, of course, after praying and, of course, calling upon the demon under the authority of Jesus Christ to actually depart. Why the demon did go and was that the end of it as far as that area was concerned?
That is correct. There were some initial effects afterwards, but that's to be expected. Usually within a week, everything. It's the only way I could describe it to you is as though you filled a glass full of smoke and you waved your hand over the top of it. You're just wafting out smoke and just waiting for it to go away. It has to lift. And after a few days to a week, it's gone. It's usually the family is a little unsure at that point in time, so it's kind of hard to tell what is still there, what is still remaining. It takes just a little while, but usually after a few days to a week, it's okay.
Well, because you work completely under the authority of your bishop.
Yes.
Well, are there similar stories of this sort that they have Discovery Channel cover other ones, or just this one?
Oh, sure. Also the Diabolical. Also Hell House. These were all other cases I was involved with.
Well, why don't you tell us about the Diabolical or about Hell House?
The Diabolical involved a case in Newburgh, New York. This was in the Hudson Valley of New York. Have you ever been in that area?
No, I haven't. I know that, of course, was very important as far as the original fluoride studies was concerned, but
yes.
Go right ahead.
This area has a long history. It's very, very old. Now, this particular case involved a young mother She was recently divorced, and she had quite a few children. One of her children was microcephalic, and this means that the child's head is not quite developed as it would be at different ages. It's a little smaller. You usually don't pick up on this you don't really see it until later on in life. Around the age of 12, 13, they start really forming as an adult. The head will slope, but you'll mild retardation. I'm sure you could explain it a lot better than I could. But this child in this home that this mother had acquired was in contact with this particular spirit. Now, this spirit obviously was residing in this home, had been there for whatever reason. We did not find out really the reason why this spirit was attached to this home, but we know that it was using this child who did not know what right and wrong was. So the child could not become possessed, and I want people to understand that when they're watching that. It wasn't the child was possessed, because you have to know right and wrong to be possessed. It has to be a willingful act. You have to let it into your life. But barring all that, this child was a gateway, and the whole family was being affected. This entity started to react upon the mother, and after a period of time, she became very distraught, but she wanted to keep her life as normal as possible. She had met a man along the way and became friends with him. He had come over to the home, and they liked each other, and the relationship was building at this point in time. He found himself to be slightly gifted psychically. I don't know how much so, but he had said that he felt something in the home. He suggested to her that they use a Ouija board. Now, they had used the Ouija board on one particular occasion. This was on the same night, but they used it twice. The first time that they used the Ouija board, two names, AJ, and there was another name, for the life of me, I can't think of it at the moment. One of the names was AJ, and it came through the first time, and they only had gotten the names. On the second attempt with the Ouija board, all they had gained were blasphemy, foul words, everything that was foul came through that board, and they just were very, very frightened at this point in time. They had some physical effects that happened in that room at that particular time. They were very, very frightened. The husband, the boyfriend, I should say, at that time, had taken the Ouija board and went outside and burned the Ouija board. One thing I have to say to your audience, if you do use a Ouija board, don't be embarrassed to contact somebody who knows what they're doing and the proper disposal of this. This man burned this Ouija board. This does nothing. All it does is just burn the physical object. The gateway is still open. When he burned that Ouija board, he let loose what they had contacted fully. This just gained a stronghold in their life quicker than it ever would. It just expedited this. Now, the effects that they had were horrible, absolutely horrible. They'd be laying in bed, and a man with slick back black hair and a mustache would appear upside down at where the bedroom entry point was, upside down in the doorway. His head would come upside down, like I'm describing to you, and would be looking into the room and looking back and forth and frightening them. At one point in time, one of the children saw a face come through the wall, and it's presented as the wall stretching in the film, but really it just came through the wall. Physical matter doesn't mean anything to these things, so it just came through the wall. It would frighten these children. It would appear in the windows. Now, as this went on, they wanted to find out, how can we, help ourselves, so they contacted a group. They had this one person come in. This person was gifted. They had come down and actually into contact with them before the person actually came down. The person suggested to them that they put white powder on the floor, because they were getting all these different effects, and they wanted this person suggested to them, well, if you put white powder on the floor, it's possible that you might be able to pick up footprints or something of this nature. So they did do this. Now, the woman had come down, and when she did finally come down to meet them physically, they showed her what was written on the floor, and it had said Lilith. Now, they didn't know what that meant. They asked her, do you know what this means? And she said to them, I do. I think I do. She says, you don't know anybody named Lilith, right? And they had said to her, no. She said, I can't involve myself with this case. And she walked up the stairs, as you see in the movie. They said, why? Why can't you help us? That's my daughter's name. Now, we see the demonic already interceding. It's cutting down their help. Now, the first help that they had contacted, it just wiped it clean. There's no help there. So now they contacted somebody else after that. That group came in and became very, very frightened also from the effects in the home. That help went away too. Now they're feeling a sense of dread and doom Where are they going to go? Fortunately for them, the second group that had come in didn't leave them fully. They knew me. And they had called me and said that this was a little bit over their heads and if I wouldn't mind coming down and talking to them. I became involved with the case in April of 1999 after a phone call I was obviously talking with the other group, but I also had received a phone call from the family, from the mother and the boyfriend. At that time, they're married now. That's why I'm getting confused because they are married now. But I had gone to the house. We had talked to them. We interviewed them. And we set up our equipment. During that time, we had one of our investigators, during the investigation, thrown down a flight of stairs. Now, that wasn't the only thing that happened in that. It's presented in that show is that we had one of our investigators who had looked up, and when they presented in the movie, and I'm trying to go through the movie because I know people saw that. So he's looking up, and he saw what they saw in their doorway, that man with the slick back black hair and that mustache. It presented itself to one of my investigators the same way. He described this to us. He was very, very frightened at this time because it was just unexpected. It wasn't too long after we had gotten to the house. When you go into a case and you're already seeing these effects, it affects you. And I don't mean to sound, I don't mean to be repetitious here, but it's when you go to a case, you're saying to yourself, well, we're going to do an interview, we're going to do an investigation, we're going to find out what's going on here. You're not expecting to have stuff happen right off the bat. And that doesn't always happen that way. But when it does, obviously there's something bad happening here and you need to get help to these people. So, after we had initially done this, after the fall of one of my researchers and also what my other researcher had seen himself, I had come to the conclusion that this family, even at that time, they needed help. So in that, we needed to find out what was the entry point. And at this point in time, we didn't know really which way to go. So we had brought somebody in. I had an idea of where it was coming through because the initial contact with the daughter, and as the interviews went on, we had found out that she just described these multiple in her way, she was able to verbalize very, very slightly. It wasn't something where she was able to talk to you and conjugate sentences and whatnot, but she was able to point at certain things. What we found out was that it was appearing to her as Chucky. This was a cartoon. It was a Rugrats cartoon, and she would watch this with the brothers and sisters. And we had gotten some books, and we tried to see if we can find out what it was appearing like, and we basically honed it down to it was appearing as this Rugrats character. It was very enticing to her, and she was the entry point. And this was definitely something that was locked in after we brought in someone who was psychically gifted. Someone who, actually, I shouldn't say psychically gifted. Someone who has the gift of spiritual discernment. And we did find out that she was the entry point. I didn't really want to take too much time with this because it was children involved. And any time you have a case where there's children involved, you try to expedite it as quick, you try to go as quick as possible. So I had spoken with Bishop Robert McKenna, and we set up a date for the exorcism to occur, and it was the exorcism of the home, and to shut down this gateway, this way in. So we had done that, and it was quite extraordinary. During the exorcism, there were three loud booms that were heard that came from the lower part of this house during the exorcism, and it was heard by Bishop Robert McKenna. But we were able to help that family. It's presented at the end that it leaves you a little bit in question if it's still there, but it is gone. Oh. That was just Hollywood giving you a little fright.
Well, of course, there are two or three responses to these stories. One would be total disbelief. It's just not true. The second would be, that sounds really exciting. I'd like to be able to do something about that. But this is not something that most people should be dabbling in, is it? What would you be your advice to people who are intrigued by what you're saying, and yet, of course, I certainly would never even consider getting involved in something of this sort. I think you have to have a special gift or training or selection by our Lord to do this sort of work you're doing. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, let me say this. If you are ever inclined to witness an exorcism, you let me know. I would be glad to have you.
All right, fine. Well, but for the average individual out there, for the average individual who hears this story and they're sort of intrigued by it, and yet, of course, this would be a terrifying experience, wouldn't it?
I would say do anything else but this.
Looking back on your life, are you
It totally takes over your life.
I know it does. Well, are you glad that you're doing what you're doing, or do you feel that you've been called to do it and that's why you do it?
I think that I have a small part in the grand scheme of things, and I think that I was called to do this. I believe that my family, being that they were very, very devout in their faith, I think that that helped me. But I think ultimately I have to say that I was drawn to it, and I was given this grace.
And, of course, you mentioned about the Ouija board. A lot of people think that's just, you know, that's a game. Mm. But it isn't a game, is it?
No. There's a very good book. It's called Ouija Board, the Most Dangerous Game. That's what it's called. I couldn't think of the name for a second. You can still get it. It's in Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
And, of course, with the Ouija board, you can actually begin to access these demonic spirits. But
Yes. That's
the last thing that you want to do because... of course, this could be the entry point for that into your life or into your home, can't it?
Sure. And it's not really the Ouija board per se. It's not that these things are evil per se. It's your willingful acceptance of this unknown force into your life. Why not just use your own God-given common sense?
Well, I think, you know, increasingly... people are looking for excitement there, but
Yeah. They
don't understand that this is a deadly reality, and I really believe it, Chris. There really are demonic spirits out there that are in search of the souls of men. And, of course, you open yourself, they're there to take over. Would that be a fair statement?
They are jealous of you, and they want you dead. They want you dead physically, and they want you dead spiritually.
And, of course, really, if they can destroy your faith, and, you know, I really believe that these demonic spirits are, you know, one reason why so many ministers get into problems, that these demonic spirits really will target ministers, and they'll target Catholic priests, and,
mm-hmm. And
of course, anybody who really, you know, is there working for God. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. And may I add something now that I'm thinking of it?
Go right ahead.
I want to warn individuals out there that if they don't have to come to us, but if they go to anyone for help, be very, very careful if they're charging for their services. Now, I'm not talking about donations. Donations are good. They keep things going. But if they charge you, be very, very careful.
All right. Now, what about a website? Do you have a website or some means by which people can get in touch with you?
Yes, I do. My website is www.phantasmpsiresearch.com. And that's phantasmpsiresearch.com.
All right, fine. And of course, why did you call it phantasm?
Because I had felt in the Latin and also in the English that it stands for the spiritual. People can lock on to that. And psi, obviously, is the unknown. And research, well, that's what we...
And, of course, have you done any scientific studies on this, or is this mostly simply a spiritual approach to these truly demonic spirits, which can actually haunt houses and certainly haunt individuals?
Oh, yes. We use quite a bit of equipment. Infrared, we use ultraviolet, we use... line analyzers to be able to see what the frequency is in maybe a voice or a sound. We have come to the conclusion that these ethereal sounds, if they are below 300 hertz, we're looking at something that cannot be produced by the human vocal cords. We also look for trickery. Sometimes you may have someone call you up and you're going to a particular house and maybe they want to write a book or, you know, maybe they want to just be somebody. Maybe they're, you know, for whatever reason. So we have to be very careful.
And, of course, what you're really saying is they're trying to deceive you and try to make you appear to be foolish.
That's correct.
Well, of course, there are a lot of people out there who say this thing really doesn't exist. What do you say to the people who say, I don't believe this could be true?
I hope they never do find out.
Well, of course, I think it's important people understand there is a spiritual dimension. It's not imaginary. It is really the place where so much of the battle for the survival of Western civilization is being fought. And it's a battle for the souls of men. And do some people actually give in to these demons? And
yes,
let
they
them
do.
Take over?
They become perfectly possessed, as my teacher, Malachi Martin, would say.
And I certainly miss Malachi. We've had a lot of wonderful conversations with him. And do you have any recorded conversations?
Oh, yeah, well, yes. I don't have them right now, but we, if we would do a show at a later time, I could have something prepared.
All right, fine. Well, we would certainly do that. You hang on here.
Sure.
And our guest, of course, has been David Considine. And, of course, he has actually a ministry, Fantasia.
Phantasmresearch.com.
Is that right?
It's www.phantasmresearch.com.
Okay, there we are.
Kind of hard to say, I know.
And what if you need it? We'll be glad to get it for you. Well, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. Are you doing a lot of radio at the present time and interviews?
I wish I had more time, too. We had, many years ago, back in 2004, we had done the Coast to Coast program and received many, many phone calls and emails. It's every time I seem to get on the air, we receive more and more contacts.
Of course, Coast to Coast really sort of specializes in this sort of thing, you know, the bizarre, the supernatural, but of course, they're not approaching it from a Christian point of view. Ordinarily, what sort of response did you get as you began to getting at the background of the Christian aspect of the true spiritual, the spiritual as far as our Lord Jesus Christ is concerned?
I had been contacted by clergy of many denominations, many faiths, which was very good. But I also received a lot of fan mail that, well, let's just say that they were involved with tarot cards and they didn't want to give them up. And they thought that what I had to say was no good. So I pray for them.
That's all you really can do.
Yeah.
I get
you have to make your own decision. And even if someone is out there, they believe in their faith wholeheartedly, remember, no matter if it's your son or daughter, you can't push this down their throat. You have to let them willingly accept God into their life.
And yet, of course, this reality, the realization that there is the other dimension, it only tends to strengthen my faith that, you know, not in the supernatural, but in the Lord Jesus Christ, because the Holy Scriptures talk about this sort of thing. And, of course, you suddenly begin to realize that what it says in the Holy Scriptures really is true. Has this certainly helped strengthen your faith and the work that you do?
Oh, yes. I try to learn from the Church Fathers. I try to at least have a working knowledge of theology. I'm not very well schooled. I haven't attended Oxford or any one of these pristine colleges or whatnot. But I put myself on that line and tried to learn from the best that I could.
Well, I'm not sure that actually going to Oxford or the other Christian colleges would prepare you for what you're doing, because so many of those actually destroy the faith of the people who go there. Sometimes a simple faith built upon just a belief is far better than, and on faith is far better than all the book learning that you can get at our major universities. Hey, we're out of time. David, thank you so very much for sharing your time with us and your experiences. And I hope maybe we can get you back and we could get some of the material that you shared with Malachi Martin and he shared with you.
Oh, sure. I would love to come back on.
Good night.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye. God bless you.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Anybody who would like to get the complete tape, it is available from Radio Liberty. Of course, we do talk through the breaks there. But certainly, David is a fascinating guest, and the message he has is fascinating. And, of course, as we were talking, you know, he was just saying he doesn't have a lot of book learning. He hasn't been to a major university like Oxford or Cambridge or other places like that. And I commented, maybe you're a lot better off, because sometimes too much education can destroy your faith. And what we need is a personal faith, not built upon book learning, but upon the realization that there really is God, there really is a spiritual battle, and you have to know which side of that battle you're on. So I hope you enjoyed our interview with David Considine, and then, of course, we We do have a number of four-tape sets that touch on this. Certainly we have the four-tape set on the supernatural. Interviews with a gentleman on Aleister Crowley, and certainly with Joanna Michelson. That's the four-tape set on the supernatural. We have a four-tape set on Satanism Deliverance. We carry, of course, the books Satanic Crimes. We carry the book Programmed to Kill. And, of course, many of these people are victims of satanic ritual abuse and, of course, have been programmed to carry out some of the most heinous crimes you can imagine. Now, the reason we carry these things is because we want you to understand that there really is a spiritual battle going on for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And we're not just talking about haunted houses. We're talking about people at the highest levels of government who will create wars and send our boys off to fight and bleed and suffer and die in wars that they're never to be allowed to win. We talk about the mass murders as they had, certainly in Russia, where between 40 and 60 million people were murdered by Satanists and by a satanic movement. Of course, not everybody involved was a Satanist, but certainly Marx and was involved, and Lenin was deeply involved in the occult. All of these people at the top are involved in the occult, and this is why they do what they do, because they're energized by evil. And, of course, if you'd like to get into the background of Marx, we carry a book called Marx and Satanism, or Satanism and Marx. And then, of course, you want to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to get my talk on Forbidden Secret. And these things will all help you to recognize what's going on. We put together a great four-tape set on The Secret, which is being pushed by Rhonda Burns. Millions of copies of a DVD and book were out there. You can buy the book at Costco, and it's introduced literally tens of millions of Americans to Frank Introduction to Demonism, A1 Introduction. You need to understand what it's about, and you need to understand how to counter it. And the four-tape set we have is The Secret Behind the Secret. And then, of course, you'll want to get my talk on The Forbidden Secret. These things will all help you better to understand the true nature of the battle we're involved in today. And then, of course, we hope you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly. You, of course, can go to Global Star at www.globalstar. Go to Channel 4, and you can listen to the programs 9 hours a day. You won't get much done, but at least you'll begin to get a glimpse of the true nature of the battle that we're being drawn into increasingly, and what lies ahead for America. And, of course, things are going to get a lot worse, and as we've said many times, that is the best thing in the world, because unless things get bad, the average American is not going to be concerned. And as things do get worse, then you're going to have to learn how to be there, how to begin to get people educated. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927. So please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Till Monday, may the Lord be with you. Well, are you all set to go to work?
Yes.